Good morning and good afternoon. Good evening to some of you. Thanks for joining us this morning, or at least this morning out here in the Cascadia region, also known as the Pacific Northwest. We're going to let a few people filter in here, and then we'll get started with our Q&A panel, and I'll introduce our panelists. For those of you that I don't know, I'm Tad Bradley, the principal here at the Cusini Collection. We are the North American marketing and sales representatives for First Nature, among other independent owner-operated tour operators around the world in Africa, Latin America, as well as here in the USA. And today we're going to be discussing the recent spate of misinformation that has been spreading around the media about the Pacific Northwest, particularly about Portland and Seattle. As well as some of the impacts most recently on touring in the region, thanks to the really serious and sometimes tragic wildfires that were happening here several weeks ago, in particular in the mountains of Oregon. I'm going to start off here and just introduce our panel. And if you do have questions, feel free to enter them into the chat feature at the bottom. After we start off with a couple of our questions that we've planned on, we'll also open it up to other questions from the audience. If you want to turn your camera on and ask a question and turn your audio on, feel free. If you're feeling shy and don't want to turn your camera on, that's okay too. But you can also enter in your questions into the chat if that's how you feel most comfortable. So let me first introduce Dan Moore. Dan is a tourism entrepreneur. He's a professional ecotourism guide, a naturalist and outdoor educator. He runs Pandion Consulting and Facilitation, which provides tourism development and consulting, guide training, and all the while working to raise the standards, quality, and sustainability of the tourism industry, in particular here in the Cascadia or Pacific Northwest region. Dan was also a past board member of the Washington Tourism Alliance, Washington State's new tourism board, or DMO. Dan lives in Seattle, just up the hill from me here. He's happens to be my neighbor, and he's also an occasional running and biking partner as well. So Kieran Widener is the founding director and head naturalist guide for First Nature Tours, based in Portland. Prior to starting his career in tourism, Kieran studied forest ecology, which is particularly useful given one of our topics today on the wildfires in the Northwest. Prior to First Nature, Kieran honed his craft as a guide throughout the Cascadia region, as well as up in Alaska and even the Galapagos, I think possibly beyond. He is recognized as one of the best guides in the Cascadia region, and he uses his many years as a guide and expert destination knowledge to design truly innovative, immersive, and bespoke itineraries for First Nature guests in the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, and beyond. And then Elena Vizzini is an experienced curator with First Nature Tours. She's often your first contact when you're working with First Nature to design an itinerary. So some of you may have already been in touch with Elena, or you may also know her from her days at Travel Oregon, the tourism board in Oregon, and where she was the destination development and global sales manager. She's a Portland native and has traveled extensively throughout the state, uncovering hidden gems to promote with domestic and international visitors, travel trade, and the media. She has extensive experience working collaboratively with local suppliers and neighboring destinations to develop unique travel products for the Pacific Northwest. So we've got a great panel today. Like I said, I'm Tad Bradley. I'm also in Seattle, so a native of the Seattle region, and live in the city itself. So today we're going to start off talking about the recent wildfires that ravaged part of Oregon, part of Washington State, and sadly are still happening down in California. So Kieran, I thought we'd start with you with some support from Elena as well, but just to get an update on the wildfire situation as it currently stands in the region, and also talk a little bit about the unprecedented nature of these particular wildfires. I think sadly, unprecedented is kind of now precedent for a lot of global weather events and climate change impacts. But in the case of these particular wildfires, they were relatively unprecedented for Oregon. So just give us an update on where things stand and talk a little bit about what happened in that particular case with these fires.
Yeah, well, this year is, like you said, it's unprecedented, at least as far as our recorded history. We've had what you could kind of describe as a perfect storm of a really high pressure system in the middle of the continent, pushing what would normally be westerly winds the opposite direction and pushing them out towards the ocean instead of the other way around. So really, really warm, dry air, you know, inside the continent, pushing outward, causing the perfect conditions for fire if it were to start to spread really rapidly. And so that's what we saw happen here. And it continued for quite a long time in September, where it was kind of raging out of control all the way down, up and down the western coast. This high pressure system kept these high winds and warm, dry air spreading the fires rapidly. Beyond what we could even begin to contain. It was very much an emergency reaction scenario with firefighters trying to evacuate people first and foremost before they started actually trying to contain fire. And so that was the scenario we were dealing with earlier in September. And what was unique about this, like I said, was this high pressure system kind of creating the conditions for the fires to spread really rapidly, kind of out of control. And we've been having these longer, drier summers as well over, you know, the course of the last several decades. There's been a drying trend in the Pacific Northwest that's been leading to more and more conditions for these fires to happen, as well as, you know, more and more human incursion into areas that were predominantly wilderness, and that combined with kind of poor forestry habits for, you know, 150, 200 years, people were like, oh, fire bad, when they moved out in these areas, and they stopped it from burning, and then they clear cut massive areas as well that would have been old growth and would maintain moisture levels.
As far as the impacts that you guys faced on your touring, I know that you did have several small groups in the region during the period, or at least shortly thereafter, where the fires were burning. Can you talk a little bit about any impacts on those particular tours, and then on some of the feedback that you got from those guests that you had in the region during that time?
Yeah, so I'd say the major impact is we had a week-long tour canceled basically 2 days before it was supposed to start, you know, which was difficult, but I guess luckily, you don't say luckily due to COVID very often, but luckily because of the already very terrible scenario we've had in this horrible year of 2020 with COVID, most people's cancellation policies have been updated to become incredibly flexible, or they wouldn't be getting any bookings, and that's ours included. So we were able to get all the deposits back that we had made on behalf of the client and able to give back the deposit to the client as well. But, you know, obviously it was lost revenue in a year where revenue is already very, very small. But we did have some other clients that did travel, and we were just giving day-to-day updates on the smoke and the fire status, pretty much up until the day they got here. And even then some, and luckily the fires died down significantly, right before they got here, and the winds shifted back, to come from the west, and the air cleared up. So it was kind of perfect timing that they were still able to do their multi-day tour. And it wasn't really negatively affected at all. I guided part of it myself, and, Elena was even out in the field for part of that one. Yeah, it was great. They had a great time. So, and that's kind of what was the date on that, Elena? Do you remember the date?
The 19th to the 22nd.
Yeah. So by the 19th of September, everything was basically clear and very breathable again, and clear skies out on the coast. It's been that way ever since.
And let's look forward here. I think, what's important for those that are in attendance today to take away is some strategies, some forward thinking strategies, some savvy, you know, advice from the three of you on, you know, how do we take into consideration what could be a future fire season that is more like this, unfortunately, due to to the climate and changing weather patterns. So what are some of the ways that you guys would recommend on how to book travel, you know, in other seasons? Maybe you look at spring, maybe you look at early in the summer, or even the winter, which I think a lot of people in the Northwest and in the country for that matter, and abroad as well, don't often think of the Pacific Northwest as a winter destination, but it absolutely is. But how would you recommend that the travel planners look in the future toward planning travel in the Pacific Northwest? Is there a period now that you would consider, you know, a week or two period where you would avoid just because of this year's experience?
If I can just jump in real quick, I'd like to share an anecdote from years ago leading a tour in February. And it was a solo traveler from Australia. And speaking about wildfires, they had some raging wildfires at the time. And everywhere I went around the region, and this was in Washington State, introduced people, oh, this is da-da-da-da from Australia. And they're like, oh, you have to come back in August and September. It's the best time. And I was like, no, she's here right now. We're enjoying the snow up in the mountains. And her country is currently on fire. And it's beautiful weather here compared to that. And so I think one of the key things that we on our end in our communities need to recognize is that it is nice in many times of the year, and especially because we've got such diverse geography here in the Northwest. So in the springtime, where it might be kind of cool and rainy still on the west side of the Cascades, we can head into the central and eastern sides of both of our states and get incredible, sunny, beautiful days in the desert. Lots of great culinary activities that can happen out there from the wine and the beer industries and the food growing crops. And wildflowers and bird watching wildlife watching is incredible in the central and eastern parts of the state at that time of the year. So I think there's two things going in our favor. And the one is the fact that we've got such diverse climates and geography here in the Northwest to take advantage of, whether it's an incredible snowy ski day in the mountains in the morning and then head down to kayaking here in Washington, head down to the Puget Sound for kayaking or sailing in the afternoon. So there's very few places in the world where you get so much diversity in such a small amount of territory. And then I think the other component is just the aspect that we've got a lot of diverse activities as well, from outdoor recreation to culinary to culture and things like that. And so many of those are even better outside of our typical summer touring months. But for those of us who live here, we get so used to telling everybody that it's so amazing in September. And now that we're seeing that, we don't always get to bank on that every year because of the couple weeks that we're dealing with some wildfires.
That's a great point, Dan. The diversity of climate just within the region itself presents opportunities for planning, you know, around other time periods. So like you say, in the winter, you know, looking at the east side of the mountains where the weather is oftentimes sunny and maybe a little bit cold, but it still, you know, doesn't impact touring much at all. So not only reconsidering your travel planning around seasonality, but reconsidering your travel planning in specific seasons because of the diversity of geography and climate just within this this really incredibly diverse region in so many ways. Kieran and Elena, anything further to add on what you guys are anticipating or how you would recommend planning, you know, seasonality wise or climate wise, depending on the month or the time of year?
Well, we're always pushing shoulder season in general and off season just because of the crowds and the benefits of lower rates in general too. I mean, there's so much you can see and do outside of the main summer months that most people are traveling and seeing and doing it without having to push through crowds of people and having to pay literally twice the rates on hotel rooms is a huge benefit. So, you know, obviously some people are limited and, or at least have been in the past by being able to only travel in the summer months, you know, when kids are out of school, et cetera. but hopefully that's changing a little bit with the new world we live in now. It's working from home and you know, people having more flexibility with their, you know, their free time, and working from abroad as well. So I would like to say that, I'd predict a little bit more of that travel, spreading across seasons. Just seeing the numbers that we've been seeing from short-term rentals, and, you know, we have a short-term rental here on our property and it's booked out through December already, with people that are staying for weeks at a time. And I think because there's so many people that are wanting to be working remotely, and actually kind of there's this exodus from big cities, not just because of COVID and getting away from the density of people there, but also because people want to take the opportunity to travel a little bit and to see, you know, the world after they've been shut down and quarantined for months this year. So, you know, that's one of the things that you can do now. And a lot of the appealing things in a lot of the biggest cities aren't even accessible. So a lot of the appeal of living in a big city isn't really there. So we're seeing a lot of people starting to even look at travel already in the off season more than we have in the past. And I'm hoping that trend will continue. And it's definitely like September, you know, there's just a couple weeks really in September that we do really have the highest danger of having wildfires. And typically those wildfires aren't anywhere, at least in Oregon, Washington, very close to the areas, that people will be flying in and out of. And a lot of the areas we tour, at least in Oregon, are pretty, safe from wildfires in general. Like they're areas that are, you know, not massively, you know, secondary forest and, or also towards the coast. So it's never really been much of a concern, honestly, in the 15 years I've been doing this. It's never, you know, wildfires have never been a major concern. They kind of happen more in like the, you know, the high Cascade areas that are, you know, a little bit farther from where we do our activities. And September is a really beautiful month to be everywhere in the country. But yeah, I would definitely encourage people to, like Dan was talking about, to explore the opportunities we have recreationally here for all kinds of things, all seasons. Snow here is incredible. And volcano skiing is, you know, some of the best you can get, views alone.
Yeah. If any of you received my email yesterday, promoting this particular Q&A, you would have seen a link to the itinerary that Elena and Kieran put together, the winter itinerary in Oregon, Cascades to the Coast, and it illustrates just the incredible diversity of landscapes, of activities, and of people that one can experience during the winter. I think another important point here is to really emphasize how critical it is to have a local partner like First Nature for your clients when they're traveling in these times. And that's not only ahead of time to be able to bring the local savvy, the local knowledge to the trip planning, but also should something happen with, you know, let's say, you know, God forbid, fires during a tour and we have to change up an itinerary, being able to be nimble, to be flexible, to make changes, to think on the fly as to, okay, today we can't go to this part of Central Oregon because of there's a wildfire or there's something happening. Let's adjust and we'll go to the Columbia Gorge, or we'll go, you know, farther east, or we'll go to the coast. And that's where I think Elena and Kieran, you guys really bring that level of tailor-made ahead of time, but also that nimbleness, that creativity, and that ability to really adjust on the fly as needed while actually on tour.
Yeah, I actually wanted to speak a bit to that point as well, because both Kieran and I work really closely with a lot of partners in the destination. We have very personal relationships with a lot of them. So the benefit, and I'll use the example of working with Catherine, who's on the call today, that I was able to be in touch with, you know, the 7 or so vendors that were associated with her itinerary, and be the single point of contact in terms of conditions and what we needed to be aware of for that client traveling, kind of making that decision a day or so before their arrival, if they were even going to come. So But that's the benefit that I think Catherine really saw in working with us for the first time. And on top of that, I do want to speak a little bit to the off season too. There's this conception that I grew up in Oregon, and sometimes when I introduce myself, I say I'm from Portland, where it's 9 months of rain. But you know, there is a very big difference, as Dan said, about our climates throughout Oregon and Washington. When you get on the east side of the Cascades, there are destinations, for example, Bend, that promote almost 300 days of sun a year. Though they do get snow, it's clear skies for most of the part over there. So I do want to kind of change the view of kind of that lush green forested, heavily forested idea of what the Pacific Northwest is like, because it really is a microcosm of many different ecosystems. Along with that, a lot of the communities, I used to work in community development in the state, and a lot of the communities have really built strategies around seasonality and providing year-round experiences. And that's anything from certain festivals that only occur in the winter, spring and late fall months, to encouraging businesses to have a really unique approach to when it is raining, to have an intimate experience indoors. I am curious to see what that's going to look like with COVID. However, I know that we are a very creative destination and we work very collaboratively. And so I just want to echo that to any of you who aren't really familiar with working within the Pacific Northwest. The last thing I do want to mention is the expertise that Kieran and Dan and I bring is that we know this place like the back of our hand. So if you have an inquiry or about a certain time of year, we can rattle off the top of our head more or less like what is going to be great to see, what's not worth it, blah blah blah, like what areas to go to. So that is another benefit of working with a local operator that has a more regional focus and can move about outside of cities have a more holistic approach about what this destination really is like.
All excellent points, Elena. And I think sometimes those of us Northwest natives are kind of our worst enemy when we talk about our region, because we oftentimes emphasize the rain, if only, you know, from a joking, stereotypical standpoint. But your points are right on. And I think I also, in terms of your experience and your knowledge and Dan and Kieran's knowledge, I have learned an incredible amount about this region in the short time we've been working together. And even just in that itinerary, the winter itinerary in Oregon, I didn't know there was a truffle festival in Oregon. I didn't know there were truffles in Oregon. I didn't know that there was that amazing hut on Mount Hood above Timberline Lodge that you can rent and as an exclusive group and have a chef's dinner there. And the list, I didn't know you could snowmobile to Crater Lake. I could go on and on. But you guys really do uncover these incredible gems and really bring so much value to the table. Let's transition here to the other big topic, elephant in the room, if you will, the protests that have been happening in Portland and Seattle largely over the last 4 to 5 months. I think, you know, looking at the politics of the wildfires, which unfortunately has been used really for political reasons by a lot of people, there were false reports and conspiracy theories about the fires being started by Antifa, which all officials from governments to the fire to the police all strongly condemned as false and just deliberate misinformation. I think there's also then been a lot of political motives and misinformation around the protest in both Seattle and in Portland. Even in last night's debate, for those of you that watched that, I don't know what to call that. I'm not sure I'd call it a debate, but Chris Wallace asked a question about the violence in Portland. So that question really serves as a great microcosm of the media's coverage of the region and specifically about Portland and Seattle over the past 4 months. So Kieran, I know that even your parents who live in Wisconsin, who were recently out and visited you, they had some trepidation about visiting you in Portland where you live and you work because of the coverage they were seeing in the media. Can you guys tell us, and I'll open this, start with Kieran, given your question about your parents, but then open it up to all three of you. Can you give us the real, what's really happening on the ground? And then what is the, has been the impact, if any, on your touring in both Portland and Seattle, the impact on the, that the protests are having on your touring in Portland and Seattle? So Kieran, first to you.
Yeah, there's been a lot of impact actually. And there's been just a trend of misinformation this year in general, just being disseminated, not just through actual, like supposedly credible media sources, but also through, of course, social media, which is notoriously uncredible. I've actually had like my parents like record what they're seeing on their news channel in rural Wisconsin and compare it to what is actually happening here on the ground. Cause I go downtown every day and it's completely night and day. And even some of the, and on some of the social media posts I've seen being distributed, they've used images from other protests and other riots in like Europe, not even on this continent, just to sensationalize what's been going on here. And I'm not trying to downplay the movement, which is, in my opinion, like not to get too into politics, I think is a good movement. And I think we should ride the tide of, racial equity and inclusion as much as we can. And anti-racism is important. There's that faction of it, which is, the people that are there protesting and trying to get their voice heard, against racism and against, fascism. And then there's the media sensationalization of what's happening. And then there's also like the actual racist white supremacist groups that are there just kind of like exacerbating the situation wherever they can. And then helping to spread misinformation about groups like Antifa, which has become synonymous with a terrorism organization, essentially in a lot of people's minds. Which actually is just an anti-fascist group. Of course, they are one of the more aggressive anti-fascist groups out there. But they're, in my consideration, they're far from terrorists. And so this links back even to the fires and to people spreading the misinformation that Antifa is the one starting these fires across the Western United States, as if there's any incentive there, first of all, and as if most of these people from inner cities that are anti-fascist are going, thousands of miles out of their urban areas where they're to go light a fire. There's zero evidence of that and it doesn't even make sense. So it's just been a storm of this misinformation being spread across the country, and the portrayal of the riots that we've had in Portland and Seattle has been no exception to that. I can tell you on the ground, we have a 2-block radius of downtown Portland that is home to people that have kind of set up camp as largely peaceful protesters. And what has happened is they have sent in, at one point, a National Guard was sent in to break up the encampment there because they're adjacent to the police department. And the original riots after the death of George Floyd were more violent in the sense of property destruction. There were a lot of people that took to the streets, thousands and thousands of people took to the streets. And that was over the course of essentially one weekend where property damage did happen. And there were standoffs with police. But that happened over one weekend and that was months ago. So now, there's really only from my perspective of seeing it firsthand, there's only been peaceful protests with the exception of the Proud Boys, which is a right-wing fascist group that decided to do a Trump rally through downtown Portland and drive right through the middle of a bunch of peaceful protesters. And there was a person that was shot as a result of that. But that's a very isolated incident. And once again, this is taking place in about a 2-block radius, still in the same exact place in the financial, you know, district of downtown Portland, where tourism doesn't even really exist. Like, nobody stays there. Nobody visits there as a tourist. And you've got the entire rest of the city and everything around it that you can visit completely safely. And it's safe to even to go down to where the riots were. And I've been taking tour groups down there just to show them all of the murals, because there's beautiful artwork that's been painted all over in both Portland and Seattle, where the kind of heart of those anti-racism protests were happening. And it's been largely peaceful. And Dan can probably speak more to the Seattle aspect of it, since he lives there and has actively toured people there.
Yeah, Dan, why don't you jump in on the Seattle side? I can speak to just my own experience recently in driving through the Capitol Hill organized protest area, the CHOP, that is now not really in existence except for some of the murals and some of the street art that is still there, and some small encampments on Cal Anderson Park in Capitol Hill. But I drove through there with my 6-year-old daughter a few Saturdays ago, after going shopping at Trader Joe's nearby. And it was like any normal Sunday on Capitol Hill, lots of people walking around, lots of people outside dining, you know, and it certainly didn't look or feel like, you know, a war zone. But Dan, before I let you jump in on that, just to focus this further on touring, if you could, as you answer the question about Seattle, also just talk a little bit about, you know, with the COVID era's impacts on touring in cities, and the fact that these protests really do, in both cases, impact a 2-3-block radius in Seattle and Portland. Just give an example of how you would conduct a tour today in Seattle, in the city itself, or Kieran and Elena, I'll let you talk about Portland as well. And the kind of changes that you might make to do a tour, an urban tour, both given COVID as well as the protests.
Yeah, so I'd say that my role on this panel is less specific to a company and more just to promote the motivation to use tourism professionals. And obviously I'm preaching to the choir with the crowd on this call. But I think what we've seen this year, both with COVID, with some of the social unrest as well, even more reason why on the ground travel professionals are such an important part of connecting people to a destination. So you've got a couple different angles. One, as Kieran pointed out, we're talking about very, very small sections of both of these cities that are at any one time having any degree of these demonstrations going on. So in Seattle, they primarily focused in certain areas of downtown Seattle, and then that migrated adjacent neighborhood Capitol Hill. And again, a lot of what's happening around these protests is a great opportunity from a tourism perspective, because in addition to the national conversation that we're having here in the United States around these issues, I think it shines a light on the bigger picture of what makes the Pacific Northwest such a unique location. As we talked about the diversity of geography and climate, we have a huge diversity of opinion. Everyone assumes that everybody in our region are left-wing activists. And the reality is we have a wide spectrum of thought in our region from, all across that political spectrum. And when somebody travels here, that many of those spectrums will be confusing to them, one, because of what they see in the media that is not very accurate, and two, because a lot of those conversations are more complicated. So just like anywhere in the world where a travel guide, a professional guide, is going to help you better understand some of those complexities, help you connect greater to this destination. That's exactly what I'm trying to do when I take people out touring our whole region, but obviously speaking specifically about the city. I think one thing that Kieran and I, we go back as guides working together for over a decade now. And one thing we've always wanted to do is get people off the beaten path and out into neighborhoods where a lot of the real culture and the real stories are happening. And so again, we don't need to stay in these 2-block radius of cities in order to have any tourism. We're already getting people off the beaten path. In Seattle, we've got some incredible urban parks. For example, if you're familiar with the Olmsted family of architects, most of our parks and parkways were designed in some way, shape, or form by that landscape architecture firm. So even just driving around the city, you see this heritage, you see the beauty of the landscape, and you can connect to that. And then, of course, getting outside the city, not very far, you've got great access to outdoor recreation, culinary activities, and culture. The biggest challenge in COVID, as I'm sure you've all been aware, is what's open? What can you do? So another reason and again, I'm preaching to the choir here because I think everybody on this call is already doing this, but another reason to use a professional company that is on the ground, knows what's open, might have an exclusive opportunity that the traveler just getting off the airplane might not have. And so that's been the challenge, as well as, I like challenge, but is knowing what's open and where I can bring people, and keeping the sense of safety and security we're always having to demonstrate as guides and as travel professionals. Well, COVID is just one other layer of that, and it makes it difficult, but we're definitely figuring out places to go and having these experiences that connect the travelers to this location.
Yeah, Elena and Kieran, maybe talk a little bit about how you do get, in the same way, get guests off the beaten path, exploring. I know Portland is really well known for its vibrant, unique neighborhoods. And so talk a little bit of finding those hidden gems, those little shops or outdoor restaurants in the COVID era that are so unique to Portland.
Yeah, I mean, from a guide perspective, I can definitely talk to that. I mean, we do city tours a lot, actually, and our focus has always been on getting people to places they can't get to by foot as easily, which is, the outlying neighborhoods, which is also what makes the city so unique. It's kind of where the people that have been there the longest and that are kind of like the heart and soul of the communities in both Portland and Seattle, that's where they reside. So the quirky, funky idiosyncrasies that make each little neighborhood interesting are what we're trying to showcase when we tour people around. It's not just like the drag and brag through downtown. Like, look at the, second largest, Chinatown in the country. Look at the tallest building in downtown. That kind of stuff isn't really our cup of tea, and people can find that stuff in their own guidebook. It keeps going back to the, having a specialist and having a knowledgeable tourism professional that can take you to those places and on a day-by-day basis knows what's available and what's open and what's new, and can share that with you like a local. So that's, at the core of our brand of what we're doing. And that's why, private touring has always been our main focus. We don't, First Nature has never done like set departure tours and probably never will, as far as like a, hop on, hop off experience. Everything is pretty custom and unique to the client's interests, to our guests. And you have to have a pretty wide breadth of knowledge in order to be able to handle that level of specialization on the fly. People get in the vehicle and we're like, what are you interested in seeing? Are you interested in coffee shops? Are you interested in maker culture? Are you interested in, like the eclectic little boutiques that we have scattered throughout? So there's, so much of that to offer, and basically zero of that stuff in Portland, and, even in Seattle, very little of it has been, shut down fully by the protest situation that we've been experiencing. COVID, on the other hand, has shut some of that stuff down, but is mostly now opening back up again. I know Elena can probably talk to the fact that we've had some cancellations. Actually, we probably have had some cancellations, but had some feedback about the protests from some of our partners. I don't know. You've gotten a few emails about that, right?
Yeah, I do want to chat a bit about just talking a bit about what the experience is like in the city. And this has more to do with the seasonality and the COVID perspective. But Portland is known for its food carts and its food cart pods and a very big culinary destination that is an affordable price point for a lot of people. So we've done we've been doing outdoor dining for a really long time in rainy weather. I think it's the only way us locals can stay sane. So a lot of that creativity is starting to bleed into the very fine dining restaurants. And so we are seeing certain, all-star restaurants like Kachka doing amazing private tent dining outside. And so I do just want to let people know that COVID is definitely a challenge, but I know that our businesses are rising to that challenge and creating some really unique experiences that I think are going to continue after the pandemic starts to kind of tail back. So the other thing too I wanted to mention as well is that what's amazing about Portland and Seattle is that there are great lodging options that are just outside of the city where you feel like you are basically out in the middle of nature. For example, Skamania Lodge is in the heart of the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area, and it's less than an hour's drive from Portland and from the airport. So what makes that great is that you can get a taste of the city, but really not feel like you need to stay in the city overnight. So I just wanted to let folks know that that's just a great option. And if there were to be something that arises where there would be an issue in the city, we do have a really great partners that we could try to switch lodging at the last minute. So I'm one of those, always have a plan B in mind, no matter what. And so that's just the cards that we have up our sleeve that we can use if there's ever an emergency that we cannot foresee have planned for in advance. And then in terms of inquiries, we don't have them on the call, but we did have a company we were working with that had inquiry for September travel, and then with the protests ended up backing out of booking a trip here. And then they've repeatedly said to us that the protests and the wildfires have caused additional challenges for their team to try to sell the destination. So we really want to hear from folks out there what your clients are asking or what feedback that you're getting if you're trying to pitch the Pacific Northwest. So with that in mind, I look forward to hearing the Q&A portion of this webinar to help, how we can provide talking points in addition to this that would be helpful for you and your teams.
Yeah, thanks, Elena. And I will open it up to anybody now that does have specific questions, whether you want to throw them into the chat or to turn on your audio or your camera if you're feeling brave. We'll then let Dan and Elena and Kieran have a few last words before we wrap up here. So, and if there aren't any questions at this point, you can always come through to Elena or Kieran to ask those questions. And I hope that today, at the very least, was reassuring for you as a tour operator booking the Pacific Northwest. I think it just reinforced the incredible knowledge and the savvy that these guys have in terms of not only planning touring in this region, but also how they can be flexible and be nimble if things do change. As Elena said, they have a couple of cards up their sleeves should it be needed, and always having a plan B, which I think 2020 seems to be the year of plan B's and C's and D's. So we need to be prepared for that. So
we're on plan Z.
Yeah. We've gone all the way through the alphabet and we're going to begin again back to plan A. So I don't see any questions in the chat. I don't know if anybody else is interested in jumping on audio wise. If not, we'll let Dan and and Elena and Kieran finish with any last words. Kieran, I'll put you on the spot. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up here?
Well, just that I appreciate the opportunity to set the record straight a little bit and to not trust your media sources. Talk to someone that's actually at the source. I can't say that enough in this world. Like it's crazy to me to see the things floating around there. And it's probably because it's a politically charged time, and you know it's an election year, so there's just so much misinformation floating around, even on the news, which we would hope we'd be able to trust to vet their facts. So yeah, go to us, go to someone you know directly that's you know at the source and can tell you you know firsthand what's actually going on. Because you know we are a very safe, clean, friendly destination to travel to, and we'd love to have you. And we have been getting, like Elena said, we've been getting a lot of feedback from people that is all very fear based about traveling here. Mostly, not even because of the fires as much, but mostly because of the protests actually. And people aren't thinking of it as a safe place to travel to. So we just want to make sure people know that that is not the case. It is a very safe place to travel. And yeah, we hope we see you.
Elena, anything to add?
Yeah, Kieran definitely covered a lot of it. And I just wanted to echo too that we're a resource for you. So do reach out to us and we'll get back to you as soon as, you know, pretty quickly to address any questions or concerns you may have. And we're always happy to pitch ideas to you that you could send along to your clients if they're looking for a really unique destination within the US.
And Dan, I know you love having the last word, so I'm gonna give you the last word today.
Thanks. Well, I think the first part is just my view on what tourism, what the whole purpose of having people travel away from home is to learn new things, to get exposed to some new ideas perhaps, and maybe even be slightly outside their comfort zone. And so I think the opportunity for discussion around whether it's the politics or the environment here in this region, traveling here right now even more so, when people are concerned, we can assuage their fear and their concern. But at the same time, I don't think we should downplay that having real conversations about the state of the world is what this region is known for. And that's a good thing about traveling here. And whether it's challenging people from the culinary perspective, the outdoor recreation perspective, but I think also challenging people in terms of how they view the world in ways that are welcoming and safe for them to do so is part of what this region is known for. So I think it's great that we're in the spotlight right now, and we have an opportunity to flip what seems to be a negative spotlight around into what is positive about this region. And so that's a big reason why I wanted to be here today and support you all.
And thanks, Dan. And Elena and Kieran, thank you so much as well for your perspectives and your insights. I'm just going to throw out one last thing for those tour operators on the call. If you, and I'm going to volunteer this before clearing this with Elena and Kieran, but I think they'll be okay with it. But if you do ever need your local experts like Kieran and Elena to do a webinar for your guests, whether it's a webinar that you're going to promote, a Pacific Northwest webinar, or just a specific one-on-one with a particular guest who's interested in booking, but maybe have some trepidation because of what they've been hearing in the media, please reach out to Elena and Kieran. They'd certainly be happy to do something like this on a one-on-one basis or on a promoted webinar basis for your individual company as well. So I think that could be very helpful to debunk some of these stories that the media is propagating right now about Cascadia and Seattle and Portland. And yeah, as Elena said, this will be posted online, so you will be able to watch this in its entirety later if you want. And again, I think all of our panelists, super insightful, got me excited again about the Cascadia region. And I think we really did, you guys all really brought to the forefront what is actually happening on the ground here and how safe and incredibly diverse and amazing this destination is for people coming to visit. So thanks for that. And thank you all of you for attending today and for your thoughtful and open-mindedness to the Pacific Northwest. And we look forward to taking care of your guests, hopefully in the near future, as well as well into 2021 and beyond. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Wherever you may be, take care. Thanks.
Thank you.